Yes, welcome back from the bottle break. Thanks for inviting me to this. I said in the intro that I'm not an expert on metamodernism, coming from a sort of left off field. Still don't feel like an expert, but this is so interesting to see how the stuff connects. I just broke down a lot of notes that could sort of be included into this and further. So this is really cool. My talk here is based, like I said, on the chapter that is of the same title that is in the anthology. So some of you might already have seen this, we developed sort of particular approach there. I say we because this is co-authored with my colleague and good friend Gry Rustad, that some of you know, postdoc here at the Institute. She couldn't be here today. She's in Bergen. I got the job. but this will, of course, work fine. I thought what I do is that I sort of walk you through our approach that we have in the chapter and the general hypothesis and some of the cases, but then expand the argument a bit further, because we had to stop in the book. And also there was a lot of stuff happening, if we're talking humor, comedy, satire, in the recent year alone, that perfectly fits our research agenda, if I can call it that. So this is an ongoing project, and it was fun to look at that stuff again while preparing this. And eventually we'll try to land on an answer, what that might be, a metamodern sense of humor, or what constitutes that approach to metamodernism and humor. As an introduction, I thought I'll just sort of introduce briefly, or I'm sure remind some of you, because you probably encountered these general theories of humor, as humor research is a very interdisciplinary affair and draws, of course, from all kinds of academic disciplines. So you might probably have met these. Gry might have chosen another way in. Gry is more, we're both media scholars, but she's a sort of full-on television scholar. My focus of research is on humor and mediatized forms of humor. So I got to choose how we start this. So it's humor theory. I'm doing this because I think that these theories work as interesting touch points if we want to answer that question, what is a metamodern sense of humor? So just briefly, superiority, which is probably the oldest, going back furthest, all the way to the old Greek guys, of course, Aristotle and Platon, that basically tries to explain that weird social cultural phenomenon of humor by saying that this is always related to social hierarchy. It always makes claims about where we find ourselves on the social ladder. We laugh upwards, for example, by making fun of authorities, or we laugh downwards if we make fun of weaker people. So that includes everything from political satire all the way to mobbing humor that you would find on the schoolyards. So that's quite a useful approach. Of course, all of these theories overlap, there's not just one explanation, but these are the sort of three classic ones that have sort of distilled down from centuries of research and thinking. Incongruity probably says a bit more about a methodology of how humor and jokes work. This is usually ascribed to the German guys of the Enlightenment. Schopenhauer has refined that to a certain extent, saying for humor to work, we have to create an expectation that then is resolved into nothingness. Or in other words, an expectation that we then sort of attack and go the other way. There's a surprise and originality. But I think you could sort of extend that, which also some scholars have done, and say this also says something about the incongruity of our everyday existence as human beings. All that stuff that doesn't make sense, that we have to make sense of. And through humor, we can do that. So that works in, I guess, into that metamodern approach that we're trying to take afterwards as well. And then, of course, there's relief. And here is Sigmund Freud, big on relief humor theory. So as I always say, now we're talking about sex, death, and shit. In order to help us cope with that, we need that sort of valve. We need to look into the great abyss of all these things that fear us, that we're afraid of, and that we can't really put into, well, a language of any kind. So humor is actually a method, a vocabulary, a kind of language for us to cope with that, to talk about that. Gallows humor is a good example for that. Why is it that we laugh particularly hearty at funerals? I mean, not during the actual funeral probably, but when we sit around afterwards. It has something to do with that tension, which is a term that we get back to. That just as a way into that, as a sort of epistemological backdrop to what we're doing here. We got the idea for this paper and to try to sort of trace what has happened with humor and comedy in that context through an incident on the fantastic program Top Gear, and a controversy surrounding the now infamous host Jeremy Clarkson, who made fun of Mexicans in an episode pretty bluntly, calling them lazy and comparing that to some kind of car. What interested us then mostly were the responses to that, because there was a huge outcry from within the media, but also from a lot of comedians. And it was particularly Steve Coogan's reply that caught our attention, that said, you know, it's getting old now. It's probably because of that postmodern reaction to overzealous political correctness. So we can understand why they do this, but we should be better than this now. We should move on to that type of humor and comedy. And this is where we started thinking about that and wondering if we could sort of trace a paradigm shift in comedic trajectory, whatever you want to call it, in mediatized forms of humor and comedy. And because this is a case study problem and chapter limitations, you all know that we decide, okay, let's take a look at sitcom, situation comedy, because this is quite an interesting field to look at, because we have that perception of sitcom as a pretty conservative, almost regressive televisual genre. It harks back to the past of television. It's that live situation, that theoretical setting that somehow has been carried through, even though they are probably the biggest developments in genre, in that genre, if you look at how television has developed. So we thought that was very interesting. I have no idea why this collage includes Derek, okay, the German. you could probably view this as a sitcom, and maybe it's done, but I thought it was, yeah, I amused myself a lot, so I left it there. Also, Knight Rider. Okay, David Hasselhoff, I can see that. But we're talking about that. The development within sitcom, just briefly, of course, goes from, in terms of aesthetics, from the multicam to the single cam aesthetics. You have that development from recording this in front of a live audience to more sort of filmatic, cinematic approaches. And then eventually you will land on what we call the hybrid sitcom, morphing of genres that you can perceive pretty much today. Even though you have a coexistence of that, which is quite interesting, because there's, of course, this ties into the whole debate about quality television, multi-cam sitcoms bad, single-cam sitcoms good, but still you have incredibly popular shows such as The Big Bang Theory or Two and a Half Men that still sort of harvest high ratings. So there's something there that is still appealing today. But it's the hybrid sitcoms, I would say, today at least in academia, get the most attention. And we were trying to look at how did that development and maybe other developments affect the humor in these shows. And this is why we chose a few cases. And I'd like to just take out one of those cases, maybe one and a half, or the comparative case studies that we did. We compared Seinfeld with another sitcom that I will get to in a minute, and sort of pretty much explored it from that point of view in the beginning. Seinfeld as the ultimate 90s sitcom, maybe in par with Friends, which has a sort of slightly different approach, but we're big into the multicam aesthetics. There's a live audience, there's canned laughter, and also there is a distinct type of performance, which is probably at the center of our attention of analysis in this here, which carries that comedic trajectory of that show, and also maybe that canon of sitcoms that we use as one part of the comparative study. The performance is, as we eventually land on, a cold performance. Jerry Seinfeld is a very interesting case in particular. He's not very preoccupied with being a good actor, with being a good performer. There are hundreds of websites dedicated to Jerry Seinfeld's corpsing, like him starting to laugh in the scenes, being both part of the audience and performer, reacting to the others through the other's performance. It's totally not about immersion, is what we argue there. It's about the superficial comedic performance. And that also ties in with the humor of the show. This is observational humor. Yes, that's Seinfeld's trope, also in his stand-up comedy. But it's also cynical. It's also very xenophobic. It's about a group of friends who basically hate other people. Or as Robin Hurd put it, romantic love is not an option with Seinfeld. Even though Elaine and Jerry have dated before, this is used to make fun of. So that is briefly the one side of it. We sort of conclude there that Seinfeld is indeed drenched in postmodern ironic apathy, where the humor is first and foremost observationally distanced, highly judgmental, and very often serves as an end in itself. So the interesting bit is, of course, what do we contrast this with? And at the time of writing, it seemed a very good idea to contrast it with the sitcom Louis by Louis C.K. Of course, little did we know, and boy, were we happy when Louis C.K. Sort of became infamous for basically being a sex offender and adding a whole nother layer to the, well, ethics of research to our case. I still think, and this is why I left it in, this is from that note, an interesting thing to compare it with when we look at the further development of what we perceive as metamodern comedy. So I think it actually works fine. But getting back to the to our Seinfeld comparative here, is the interesting thing is that Louis, the series, how many people are familiar with that? Have you seen Louis? Okay, Stefan, great.
You
do. Okay, cool. It has, on paper, it's the same premise. It's a stand-up comedian playing himself, living in New York, and it's about his private life and his friends and family, so to speak, but it's a totally different approach. Of course, it is a hybrid sitcom in terms of the single cam aesthetics. It's more cinematic, poetically cinematic, as you would say. But also in terms of the comedic trajectory, in terms of the humor, it's about self-deprecation, even self-humiliation at the center of Louis C.K.'s performance and also others. And we do a close analysis of this scene in the chapter from the episode Eddie, where Eddie, who's a fellow comedian to Louis, basically confronts Louis by saying, I've had enough, I want to kill myself. I can't do this anymore. And the way the whole scene is played out, which I don't have the time to get into here, very much sort of probably transcends the boundaries of the genre, and in particular, the boundaries of what a Seinfeld definition of sitcom would be. And this is very much related to the acting, again, to the performance type. And we introduce a term here. We say that this kind of acting, then, which refuses to sacrifice all of a character's frictions and contradictions for a joke or a laugh, like the more postmodern Seinfeld does, and is primarily interested in portraying emotions in realistic human beings is metamodern and what we call a warm performance style. So we introduced this analogy of temperature, which we at least found quite useful. And now I think we're actually also getting to the question of tone and tonality that we've been touching on, because this is also something that we identify as that sort of meta-modern comedic trajectory. We also have a look at parks and recreations that some of you might have seen, which also enable that, and that functions much more in terms of its immersion with an audience than all these other sitcoms did. And we used tone in various ways, first sort of based on the work of Douglas Pye, that says something about how these shows communicate with the audience, how they invite or not invite. And we argue that these metamodern shows invite the audience to take part, to be included in the trajectory. On the one hand, and on the other hand, it's the tonality in terms of temperature. This is our conclusion there. In trying to identify the shift of tone within the sitcom genre, the question arises, how does situation comedy reflect the social cultural agendas of the zeitgeist? Or put in other words, how does humor take society's temperature? So there are, of course, other factors that play in here. And it's relates to the fact that, of course, humor is very relies heavily on its social cultural context. And this is where I now depart from what we've done in the chapter and from how we continue or now to how we continue to explore this and take a look at this, because this is actually very, very interesting using our sort of agenda to that development and carrying it over to other forms of mediatized humor, for example, in political satire or in the stand-up genre. And since 2007, with, for example, the Me Too movement that had a profound effect also on the comedy industry, like it had on the entertainment industry as well, but also in a way attacking the form in ways that we haven't seen so far. And this is why I think we have to include Hannah Gadsby and Hannah Gadsby's special that caused quite an uproar and a stir the world around the world, actually. How many of you have seen this special? Okay. It's called Nanette. It's on Netflix, and I also want to show a short clip in a minute. But just to set this up, Hannah Gadsby is an Australian stand-up comedian. She's an openly lesbian woman. And she has been doing stand-up for 15 years. And it's interesting to look at her her themes. It's a lot about the lesbianism, the lesbian situation, as she calls this, her coming out, but also about art. She has a degree in art history, and she combines that, which I think also adds another layer to our discussion here, the way how we have talked about art so far. We could include her approach to that as well, how she basically deconstructs the male gaze throughout art history. They're like flesh vases for their dick flowers. She talks about most painters using women's bodies. She really hates Picasso, which is very interesting. And she talks about that not only in that show, but also in other shows. The interesting thing for our research here is that she deconstructs the form of stand-up comedy in a way that is almost iconoclastic. It's very, very interesting what she does by basically telling an anecdote twice within the show and through a completely different context. About halfway through the show, she decides and admits that she has to quit comedy because she cannot play to the rules of the genre anymore and to the rules of that comedic trajectory that she was sort of socialized in. And I thought I'll play you just a little excerpt where she explains this, because she does that so much better than I do. And now I hope we tested this. It worked before. Of course, this is coming from a distinctively queer perspective and has that layer included in it. But it still is a full-on attack on the form. And like I said before, it's very interesting what she does with that anecdote. It's basically an event of trauma, personal trauma, that she says, I cannot tell the honest story if I use humor. I don't want to spoil it. If you haven't seen it, it's worth looking at it. Being very analytical about humor, I'm not sure whether I can agree with that conclusion of hers to all accounts. And it's also in that personal individual approach, not for us to agree or not to agree. But it was very interesting sort of devouring this show many times and start thinking about it, that I was very well aware of how certain tropes and conventions of stand-up comedy are very much steeped in a cold, as we say, and in a postmodern and in also very genderly biased context. There's a lot of angry straight men, black or white, in stand-up comedy. Anger is very much a driving force within that genre. Also, violence to a certain extent. If you think about the language that is used, killing, this joke killed. It's about heckling and interference. And her approach is, I think, a different approach. And it's that because it costs so much attention. Where do the quiet gays go is what she asked at one point when she talks about gay parades and that stuff. So this is, at least my conclusion here, is that there is an obvious desire for a change of pace, for a change of temperature within that genre, which is very broad now. And this is maybe where, and now I'm reaching the conclusion here, that metamodern sense of humor might lie. That it's something, metamodern humor, or the approach to humor with a metamodern agenda, so to speak, is operating at that intersection of irony and authenticity, where empathy plays a decisive role in a totally different way than that postmodern comedic trajectory that we were looking at. And the other aspect is how it negotiates tension, how it deals with that tension that Hannah Gatsby was talking about, but that is also visible in Louis and in many other formats, how it diffuses it rather than enhancing it. And I guess this is where it also ties in to, I think Tim was elaborating on that structure of feeling or structure of feelings, where it does just that by giving it a sort of clear structural approach to that and through that grounding it in a different way. I think it was Anselm that quoted someone, I forgot who was that, you said, you aren't allowed to have a bleeding heart in postmodernism. Here you're allowed to have a bleeding heart. It can bleed all over the stage in case of Hannah Gatsby. I leave the question mark there because we don't know yet, I would say. But I really find that we sort of entered very exciting times in terms of where comedy is going, mediatized humor. And I have a feeling that metamodernism will play an important role to explain this. That's it. Thanks.